As we get close to rounding out a year of High School Counseling Conversations, which I cannot even believe it, I've brought back Rebecca Joyner, who you may remember back from episode 15. In episode 15, we talked all about how positive relationships with students can translate into more successful classroom lessons for you as a high school counselor. Go back and give that one a listen if you missed it. In this episode, we're talking more about the counselor-teacher relationships, including some of the best and worst ones that I've experienced. We open up some conversation about taking true breaks from work and caring for ourselves and how, honestly, that is different for everyone. Now for her more formal introduction. Rebecca is my real-life bestie, and we talk about how we know each other and how that relates to our educational paths, too. Rebecca Joyner is the high school science teacher turned curriculum writer behind It's Not Rocket Science. She loves to make creative and comprehensive science curriculum that engages students and simplifies teachers' lives so that teaching doesn't have to be rocket science. She's the host of the podcast Secondary Science Simplified, where she shares tips for how secondary science teachers can love their jobs, serve their students, and do it all in only 40 hours a week. If you'll notice, the style of this episode is recorded like Rebecca is doing the interview. That is true. That is what happened. She was the one asking me the questions. We originally recorded this for her podcast, which you heard was called Secondary Science Simplified. We're repurposing it for High School Counseling Conversations because it's a fun one, and I wanted to use it too. So join us as we laugh and talk about education from both the counselor and the teacher perspectives. Let's go. High School Counseling Conversations is a podcast where we talk about exactly that, a casual potpourri of school counseling topics intended to grow us as school counselors, but also give us space to enjoy each other's company. I'm Lauren from Counselor Click, and I'm sharing my experiences and perspectives as a high school counselor. No topic is off limits, and I'm certain we'll cover it all. I'm your high school counseling hype girl, here to help you energize your school counseling program and remind you of how much you love your job. Whether you're just getting your feet wet as an intern or you're nearing retirement, you'll feel like you're just popping in to catch up with your school counseling bestie. Let's go.
Hey, Lauren, how are you?
Hey, Rebecca. I'm excited to have an interview with you. Our second interview.
I know, because I did one for you. And I mean, I'm excited. We've already talked several times this morning via voice messages, DMs, and now we're just talking over the podcast. So we're just making sure we're covering all of our communication bases.
All in one day, all in one morning. It's all in a day's work.
I'm going to write you a handwritten letter later, okay?
I can't wait to get it in the mail.
I'll get there in a couple weeks because snail mail is truly snail. But for those of you listening, if you're like, why do they talk so much? You should tell them who you are and your career history, your experience in education. Tell them who you are and how we know each other.
I would love to. I am Lauren Tingle. I am on Instagram and all the places as Counselor Click. I am a former high school counselor of almost 10 years. I worked in a large public school setting, the same school my entire career. And then in the last couple of years, maybe 2-3 years, I have taken a turn and stayed home with my girls and I'm working as a content creator and resource creator for other high school counselors. So I love putting together resources to help high school counselors to give them the tools that I didn't necessarily have or have time for when I was in the high school. So that's what I'm kind of doing now. I was, like I said, in the same school the entire time.
Well, and you had a crazy last year in the classroom because your last year was the pandemic year. And then for people listening, you were planning to go to the back to the classroom when you had your second, but you couldn't get a daycare spot.
Right. That was a quick decision. It was never anything I planned on. We made the decision, thought about it on Friday, and on Monday, I was on the phone with my assistant principal saying, I never expected to make this phone call, but here I am. Because, I mean, short backstory, daycare said, we don't have a second spot. You might want to start looking somewhere else. And then I thought, if I have a newborn and a toddler at home and daycares are closed and we're doing this again in the fall, I don't think I can be a good counselor and a good mom. So,
right.
And then I also had the realization that I can go back whenever I want. And when it's time to go back, I will go back to being a high school counselor. Like, best job in the entire world. I'm still obsessed with it.
Well, and I am so grateful because now we are on the same work schedule, aka work during nap time and mother's morning out time. And so we get to talk all the time. And okay, so we got your career backstory. Tell us our friend backstory. How do we know each other?
Yes. Well, we are best friends now because we somebody told us that we should be roommates together. When I was finishing grad school, you were finishing undergrad, and it was like multiple people were coming to both of us saying, hey, I know this girl looking for a roommate. I think you'd be friends. We became friends, we became roommates, and then we became coworkers, which is really fun. I think the people of the internet, when they see us like tag each other and stuff, I know they don't always realize that we were roommates, like living and working together, probably doing everything short of carpooling to work together. I'm surprised we didn't do that.
I mean, we really did everything. So yeah, so the context is people kept saying we needed to meet each other. I got a job at this high school. We decided to live together. A couple months later, you got a job at the same high school. So then we got to be coworkers. Plus, we were roommates. You delivered my wedding dress on my wedding day. Like, that's how close we are at this point. And now we get to like raise our kids together from across the state.
From different places, right. But
we're virtual co-parenting together. And yeah, just doing life together. It's the best. And I'm so grateful for you. And I loved working with you. It was the best time ever.
It made going to work so fun.
It made it so fun. And just knowing that there was someone who knew all the same people at work as me and like I could come home and debrief with. We had Friday Bride Day. I don't know if anyone remembers this, like 10 years ago. TLC may still be doing it if TLC is still a channel. I'm not even sure because we don't have cable. But TLC used to do Friday Bride Day and they would do Say Yes to the Dress marathons. And we would get home from work and just lay on the couch and watch Friday Bride Day and like talk about the week. And then we would rally and go to the football game together. And that was just so fun to know the same high school students, know the same coworkers, and get to do all the things together. It was awesome.
Yeah. And I would say too, we were on opposite ends of the school. Like your classroom was as far from any other place in the school as possible. So it's not even like we really saw each other that much during the day, but you know, I always had someone to sit with at faculty meetings. I always had someone to like text, like, did you just hear that at this meeting? I can't believe we're sitting in this PD together, but we probably were sitting together anyways. But, you know, just being in the same building and knowing the same people, I think is a fun point.
Like, it was fun.
You would understand the things that were stressful or the things that were annoying, and you just have someone to debrief with.
Well, and there was this one dark, dark day for me where I had a bad latte from Starbucks. And
I'm going to tell this.
I'm not telling all the details because I don't want to lose followers. But long story short, I had to SOS text you to come cover my class because I was
and that's what
exercising some demons from my body in the bathroom. And it was a tragic, tragic day.
I'm not even a teacher, but like I know that SOS distress signal when I hear it. So I'm going to run across the building and help out a friend.
So having a friend at work is the best. Any other thing you would like to say? Because I mean, then I moved because we moved from my husband's job. So you had years at that school without me and you had tons of other friends.
And I just cried every day.
I know you cried, but you have you're a very social person. One of the things I love about you and I love seeing that you do with Counselor Click is you are a gatherer and you even do that on the internet. Like that is gathering and like bringing people together is not my skill set, but you've like created this community of counselors online, but you also did that at work. So I know you had tons of friends that were coworkers. What would you say to encourage listeners out there who are like, I don't feel like I'm friends with any of my coworkers? Like, why would you encourage them to do that and take the time to do that?
Yeah, I actually thought about this recently because I met a teacher who is young, right out of college, and she was telling me, like, work is not the place where I can really make friends. It was kind of a farther drive from her, so she doesn't really live directly in that community. And she said a lot of the people that she works with are in a completely different season than her, which she's like, that's fine. Like, I can still learn a lot from them, but they don't really want to, like, hang out with me. And I thought, wow, I have been super blessed to be in a school that really does facilitate community. And that's not just me. That's something I do like to do. But we had a whole committee of, you know, they might call it different things, different places, Sunshine Committee, Faculty Climate, just a morale kind of committee. And not everybody wants to partake in those things, but there are a lot of people who move to a new area and that's where they're going to make their friends is work. And so I found a lot of value in like providing that for people. And that was not just me. I was on a team of people who did that, but that could be trivia after school. That could be a, you know, wine and design painting event, like just giving people opportunities to connect with each other. Again, it's not for everyone. Some people are going to roll their eyes and say, I have to go home and watch TLC Friday Bride Day. But some people are going to really latch onto that and make some of their best friends at work. And I saw that happen over my time there of, you know, new people coming and going. There were so many people who were like in each other's weddings from working together at the same place, which I think is really fun to really enjoy where you work and enjoy the people that you work with.
Yeah, I think so too. I always say like two of my favorite ways that we built community that didn't feel like it added to my plate, especially as an introvert. Like sometimes those social things can be just too much for me, especially after working all day. But I loved in our science department at that school, we always ate lunch together on Fridays. Like that was a day that we like socialized and we got together. And we actually had a schedule where like we rotated who brought lunch for everybody. And we would bring crock pot meals often. And that was really, really good. And then also just going to out to eat with people before the football game. Because so many of us were going to go watch students in the band or on the team or who are cheering or whatever. And it was fun to be like, hey, let's all go grab Mexican and then we'll go to the football game for an hour together. Especially like if your spouse or your kids or whoever aren't going to want to go with you, but you want to go and support students. That was like a fun way to build community with the people we worked with. And then, like you said, it just makes the day-to-day so much more fun.
I was hoping you were going to say the thing about eating lunch together with your department because my department was, you know, probably half the size of yours. And we would just, hey, are you ready to eat lunch? And like stop and eat lunch together. Cause like as a counselor, you know, if you have some meetings, you can kind of be a little flexible with your time. But as a teacher, you'll have a certain amount of time. You've got your 20 minutes, your 30 minutes to sit down and eat. But that's a fun touch point for the week. And even at the end of the week, it's like, you got to catch up. How's your week going? What are you doing this weekend? You always have stuff to talk about. So I love that your department did that. I don't think they do that anymore after you left. I don't know. You know, I don't know if it was like after you left, they stopped doing it.
They missed me so much. My crock pot meals just really brought it home. No, I loved it too, because it was the entire science department. And then we had one rogue art teacher who was like friends with all of us. I don't know if you can think of who I'm talking about. And he would always come up and eat with us, but it was just, and he participated. He was in the rotation of crockpot meals, but it was just a really fun and simple way. So I encourage you.
That's such a, like an example. His department was a lot smaller. It was him and like two other women.
And they didn't share planning.
He was like, I'm going to go make friends at work. And here's a group that's already doing that. So he felt comfortable to hop right in.
It was awesome. Okay, so obviously I wanted to have you on the podcast because you're my best friend. I just thought it'd be fun. But the other reason I wanted to have you was because I like feel like you as a high school counselor just have a lot to offer your students, but also to us as teachers. And I feel like as teachers, we often feel overwhelmed, but we don't know who can partner with us in our overwhelm to help these students. And I feel like if I hadn't been friends with you, I wouldn't have spent time in the school counseling office. Like I was going by there once a day because I wanted to see you, but then that helped me get to know all the other people in the counseling department. And then I was able to talk to them about the students I had. And I built this relationship because of my relationship with you, but I wouldn't have necessarily done that. So I would love for you just to tell my listeners, what are one or two ways you can think of where teachers could and maybe should be partnering with counselors to make their lives easier as teachers and just to support their students?
Yeah, I just thought you probably gave me too much credit right there in the beginning, that little like intro of like, wow, you're such a help. I hope I am. I would say I was thinking about this ahead of time, this one in particular, because of that. Like when you have a friend in that department, and I was thinking of our counselors that I worked with in general, when people were connected through other relationships in the school, you saw those people come down. And so whether that is they worked closely together with a classroom lesson, they just had this like background of a friendship, you saw those teachers come through the office more. And then you saw those teachers benefiting from the counselor's services because they were just making their faces known. And so I would say, depending on how your school is laid out, your students, you might have like an overwhelm of counselors at your school. Like there could be 8 different counselors. And for each student, depending on where they fall in the alphabet, you could have a different person. And that feels almost paralyzing. Like I can't even look up who their counselor is to call them because I'm going to use my planning to do that.
Right.
If you have a counseling team that can put something together, or maybe you can make a quick little cheat sheet that you can have by your phone, that you could have the alphabet listing, like I was CL through GA, last names, and my phone number right there. And so if you could see that breakdown, that's a quick way to make sure that you have somebody on call to reach out to. But also, if there is a counselor that you just connect with, use them as a resource. Don't feel like you have to only talk to the counselor that like works with that student. Yes, ultimately they're going to pass them off probably just so that everyone's workload is the same. And that counselor probably knows that student already. But if you already have a relationship or there's someone you're like, okay, I want to be friends with that counselor, they will be a wealth of resources to you, from consulting, from referrals in the school, outside of the school, to different community resources, to emergency crisis situations. I mean, that is probably the last thing you want to deal with as a teacher, like a mental health crisis on a Friday afternoon as you're walking out the door. Mm-hmm. But it happens, and you need to know who you're going to reach out to handle it, because that's not in your scope of work, and it shouldn't be. You should be giving that to the counselors who know how to do it and want to help you and help the student. So if you just go and make yourself known, introduce yourself, have a person that you know you can call on if you have a quick question, but also like a counselor there in the department that you can trust, so that you can help students, like take something off of your plate just by having a friendship with somebody, I think.
Absolutely. I talk about that in my Secondary Science Simplified course. I'm like, go over the summer, because the counselors are usually there. Like when you're cleaning out your room, just go pop your head in the counseling office, see who's in there, bring an extra coffee just in case someone's there, just to make an introduction, put your face to a name. And then that just starts that relationship. And I think sometimes we think that we're going to be burdening counselors, and so we don't want to like put more on your plate, but I don't think very many teachers are taking advantage of partnering with counselors. So it's not like there's 100 teachers going into your office all the time looking for help. And so it really does differentiate you if you're making the effort to go to the counselor and build that relationship.
Totally. I feel like we both win, because we're both here to serve and help students, and we can do that better when we know each other, and then we know students better.
Yeah. And I feel like with students like that I've had behavioral issues with or discipline issues, I mean, it's always about so much more than just me and them. It's never really about me. It's never really personal. They always have something else going on in their life. And I think oftentimes if there's a behavior issue, we're quick to be like, I'm going to call admin and get them removed, send them to ISS, whatever it may be. And it's like, what about partnering with the counselor and calling the counselor and seeing like, what's going on with this student? Like what may be happening? I remember, man, I had a really hard time with a student at my most recent job, only come to find out like a couple of weeks later that her parents were going through a divorce. Of course, she wasn't getting her work done. Of course, she was acting out and lashing out on me because she had all these things going on that she wasn't equipped to handle. And, you know, I wish at that school I had had a counselor that I had a close relationship with, to partner with, because I felt like I had to bear that burden on my own. So I definitely think partnering with y'all is a game changer.
And there are a lot of things that we might not be able to share with teachers. Like a student comes with confidentiality, and but I, especially at the high school, when they can make some decisions on their own, I would usually ask a student, hey, is this something you would like to share with your teachers? Is this something I can share, even just that you're going through something hard, and not give details? And a lot of times it's like they don't have the words to share it, or they don't know the right time to go up to the teacher and share that. But they're like, yeah, actually that would help if they just knew, like, give me some grace, or let me come down and talk to somebody when I need to. That, I mean, that makes a huge difference. So, you know, we can't always tell you every single thing that the student has said, and you probably don't even need to know. Or want to know that. Right. But just like you said, if you would have known like there was some turmoil going on at home, you could have offered something else, or not been frustrated and think it's all your fault or something.
Totally. And I feel like one of the other things that I didn't take advantage of and I wish I had was all of the knowledge that you have as a counselor, just in terms of like mental health and self-care, and not just for students, but for us as teachers. And so, you know, I told you this episode's going to air like over winter break. So there are a lot of very tired, overworked teachers that are going to be listening to this. And I would just love to hear any advice you have just from a counselor's perspective, or like, what are things, especially going into a new semester, that teachers maybe should stop doing in order to, you know, have better boundaries, protect their own mental health, and, you know, just care for students better. I would just love to hear any advice you have on that end too.
I'd say that you're really good about talking about this, so I might not bring tons of new ideas to the table. And then also, it's like this delicate dance that people don't want to hear the things about self-care that they're like so over. But I really feel like a bath. Yes. I'm not going to tell you. I mean, you can do that if you want, if that is your self-care. But like, sometimes to me, going and getting a manicure is relaxing. I don't want to talk to anyone. Like, the things that I have to identify for myself that energize me are being alone and recharging, because you're an introvert, I'm an extrovert. I have to force myself to go and be alone and recharge myself because I'm not going to choose that. But I realize, okay, I'm drained because I haven't spent time alone. So I think identifying your places that drain you and identifying places that energize you would be a good self-reflection, maybe while mm-hmm. you're over the holiday break, the winter break, and do more of that. Obviously, like, it sounds silly that I'm telling you that, but unless, you know, if you're just going to keep go, it's so easy to do that around the holidays. I want to do the fun things. I want to visit with family. But if you know that you need to recharge, look at your week and plan ahead of time and say, okay, we're going to our in-laws' house for 4 days. I'm going to need some alone time if I'm going to thrive there because I can't do that. I can't keep that up the whole time. So just being self-aware about your own needs, I think, is important. Oh, things that you shouldn't be doing too. I think you talk about this a lot, but in terms of work, keeping your email off of your phone. And people have different reasons why they don't want to do this, but I will tell you, it is life-changing to be able to separate work from home and not worry about that. It's not your responsibility. You're not getting paid extra. The emails will always be there. If you answer them, there'll be more when you open up your computer. So I would say keep your email off of your phone. On that note too, this is something that I want to say as a counselor to teachers to consider. There are legal ramifications, I would say, that you need to be aware of. They talk about this a lot in our ethics as school counselors about not being available outside of your contract hours or making that a pattern. This is like the stuff that has gone to courts and stuff when they can look and say, well, you usually answer your emails in the evening and you're always available and a student emails you in crisis and you don't respond, but you have made a pattern of responding, then you could be liable for not protecting that student or caring for them in some sort of way. If you're never answering your emails outside of work hours, that's not your responsibility. And not to say we don't want to care for students in some way. You can put up an away message and say, if this is an emergency, contact this person. But I have had teachers come to me with text messages from students, text messages back to like a remind app or emails where a student might be in danger. And that is a real weight that you can feel outside of school where you have to call 911. You have to send a police officer to their house. You have mm-hmm. to call your principal and say, hey, this is what's going on. I think we need to intervene. And that's not anything that you want to be doing over winter break or when you're on vacation in the mountains or something. Mm-hmm. I promise it's not something you want to be doing. That is very stressful.
It's so, so true. And I feel like I love what you said too about like not training them to know that you're available, but also you can just flat out tell them. Like I just would straight up tell my students, when I walk out of these doors, I am unplugged from all things our school. And so like, if you email me, if you call me, if you leave a voicemail, if you put a post-it note on my door, like I will not see it at all. But I tell them, this is when I am available. I want you to come interrupt my lunch block. I encourage students. I was okay with that. You may not be, but that's where you need to figure out what's best for you. You may be fine with students coming to see you before school. I was fine with them coming after school. I said, I'm always going to be here this, you know, 30 to 60 minute period after school, kind of tutoring the first 30 minutes, and I'll be wrapping stuff up. So if you need me, like this is when I'm available, and letting them know, because I think that's really important to set that boundary there too. And then, like you said, it's not like you're, you know, not available for students. You're just only available in a reasonable amount of ways. And if it's a true emergency, they shouldn't email you. They should call 911.
Yes. And this is, I mean, maybe this is just a public service announcement. We would always make sure in our school that teachers knew if there was a crisis in the moment like that. I'm never going to send you an email and say the student in your class is in crisis. You as a teacher should never send an email to somebody saying, my student is in crisis right now. They said when they go home, they're going to XYZ and hope that me as a counselor gets that email before the end of the school day. I have literally gotten an email like that and had to go run out to the buses and find the student who I didn't know. It was like a freshman in the very beginning of the school year. And I'm like, okay, here's their picture in the computer. I'm looking for this student. And like, what a way to meet your counselor, like when you've made some threat in class, but you need somebody to know that they care. And it was just such a mess. And so having that relationship with the counselor already, when you're a teacher, you would know, hey, I'm going to walk this student down. I'm going to call and say, hey, are you available? I'm sending this student down. I really need you to talk to them. When you have that relationship already, it's like, hey, I know what I need, what's out of my scope, and I need to send this student to you. Please take care of it. And then as a counselor, we're dropping everything to handle that. So we want to do that while we're in the school building and not we find out about it later and we all feel helpless when that happens.
I'm literally picturing where all the students are when they're loading buses and you trying to like run through the masses to find someone, and I feel stressed for you.
And like, oh, there goes their bus. What do we do? Ugh.
Right.
I'm pausing this episode to let you know of something fun and valuable that's coming. Doors to the CLIC Collaborative, my high school counseling membership, are opening again to welcome new members on January 18th. During the month of January, you can expect regular weekly episodes of High School Counseling Conversations, plus a challenge to help get you ready for the new year. I'll offer 3 live workshops throughout the month to help set you up for success as the second half of the year starts. Be sure you're on the CLIC Collaborative waitlist to be the first to hear of all of these plans. Go to clickcollab.com to join the waitlist today.
Okay, so this is a great segue to what else I want to ask you. I want to ask, what is like your most negative or annoying experience working with a teacher? If you're willing to share a story of like, please don't do this. And then also like one of your best experiences partnering with a teacher and what came from it.
Yeah. Well, this person's not going to listen to this, so I feel okay about this.
You can still keep it anonymous.
Yeah, totally anonymous. I would say one of the worst experiences I had was in my last year in the school that I was in, and it was working with somebody. It's not like we like worked super closely together, but they had a student at the school and felt like instead of she really took on the role more as the parent, but she was in the school building towards me. And we just didn't have a good relationship, and which actually like really frustrated me and made me feel like I was not competent. Like I was like, I have good relationships with everyone else in the school. Like, is there something going on like between us that like I didn't notice or like that I could have done better? I was really second guessing myself in how well I could do my job, but I had to keep reminding myself that I think she had other stuff going on, and I don't think it was me. I think, you know, if her daughter was getting ready to graduate, I think there's a lot of stress that comes with that, being a parent, like seeing your first kid off. And so I think a lot of that stress kind of bubbled up, and she yelled at me, like raised her voice in the hallway. And I was so embarrassed. No, there was one person who walked by, but it was a traumatizing experience for me. Like I was like, okay, I guess I've like been yelled at by like some angry parents before, but to have somebody who is a coworker do that felt like it just really hurt my feelings. And I was like, what do I do? Do I tell someone? Is that something like I want to be able to work peacefully like with coworkers and be coworkers first, and also like be a good coworker to you and be able to serve your family and your student.
So and it not felt feel very hot defeating. All over when I see you in the hallway.
Yes. I mean, it wasn't ever the whole time I was trying to like de-escalate it. Like, I hear what you're saying. I'm trying to understand. Like, you know, I'm like using counseling skills as it's happening. And at the same time, I was like, I don't think anything I'm going to say is going to make this better. Right. And so maybe that's words of wisdom for anybody working with coworkers. It's like sometimes people just have their own stuff going on and they're not going to hear you no matter how calm you are, no matter how many different solutions you offer. You know, I was offering solution after solution or like ways we could work together to solve this problem that I didn't even know was a problem. And I wasn't going to get it right. Like in that moment, nothing was going to be right. And we just, I don't remember how it ended. We like parted ways. I walked around the corner and my clerk in the office saw me and I just started crying. And I don't like cry very often in general. Like
you're an especially Enneagram 7.
At work. Yes, especially at work. I was like, and then I was double embarrassed. Like one, that happened, but two, that I'm crying. And I was like, I never want to relive that again. I never want to have that experience with a coworker again. Like we're on the same team. Can we please be on the same team? So an example of like not working well with a teacher or a teacher who didn't want to work with me.
Well, and it's so hard for me to imagine because I feel like you're super positive and then you're also just really laid back and easygoing. Like you're not a person that brings conflict out of people. So it's crazy for me to even imagine that happening. Also, I just laugh because we are so opposite. I've cried at work so many times. I'm like, has everyone seen me cry? Like I'm a crier. Like I just emote. If anyone raises their voice at me, I'm going to start crying. So I would have been crying in the moment.
I panicked in the moment. Like, I was very blindsided that it happened. I was literally walking back to my office and like, there she was. It's like, oh, you're angry. Oh, I didn't expect
that. Did you ever follow up and like do anything or just were like,
no. After that, I was like, I want a paper trail of every conversation we have, you know, in case she's going to be angry about something. Cause I think she was angry about something that I don't even remember what it was about, but I thought if I can be clear in what she needs help with and I can say, this is how I'm helping and have her clear expectations written down, I thought at least we could move forward from there. And it was first semester. So I guess we had to like see each other a little bit, but again, she was like on the other side of the school. It's not like we ran into each other or ran in the same circle. So like physically I didn't have to see her that much. And I just made sure that I actually talked to the student a lot more. Like I was like, the student was very pleasant. We had a good relationship. So I was well, I'll just work with you. If you have questions, please come to me.
Right. Well, I think you still did the right thing of like when you're dealing with a volatile coworker or a parent of a student, I love that you asked lots of questions. You were trying to de-escalate the situation and like you were trying to ask like, what do you want from me? Like, do you want me to offer solutions or do you want me just to like hear, like I'm here for you? And then you offered solutions and she didn't take them. And then instead of just still like pushing, you're just like, I'm going to remove myself from the situation because you know,
I don't think I like walked away. Like, you know, like I'm just not listening to you anymore. Yeah, you weren't dramatic. But
it wasn't like a scene from One Tree Hill where every argument they've ever had in One Tree Hill, it just like, they just, in the middle of the argument, they just like remove. And I remember watching that when I was dating my now husband and being like, I can't imagine in an argument, like just in the middle of it, just stepping back and walking away and like just letting the dramatic music play. Like that would never happen.
I mean, if there would have been dramatic music, there would have been a soundtrack to this conversation. So if anyone was watching, no one was really watching. So if they would have, it was terrible.
I'm sorry you experienced that. So anyone listening, don't yell at a counselor, a coworker in the
hallway.
Don't yell at
anyone. And I was like, are we adults? We're talking, like, let's talk like adults. Come on.
Also, I feel like if you are ever a part of a conflict where you do damage to another person, like oftentimes out of the conflict, I know that I can do this. Like, when I have space, I realize like I shouldn't have done that. Right. Like humble yourself and apologize. I feel like that makes, you know, a big difference. I know you didn't experience that.
And I have been a part of like, I remember in particular, you know, this administrator, I was in a meeting one time with this administrator and it wasn't towards me, but he was getting heated. I could tell he was getting frustrated with a parent that was in the meeting and he and the parent must have had some beef and they were kind of starting to raise their voices at each other. And then after the next day, I didn't think anything of it. I was like, people get mad, it's whatever. And the meeting was over. But the next day he came to my office and he apologized. He was like, I'm sorry you had to see me that way. I reached out to the parent and I apologized, but I wanted to apologize to you in case that made you feel uncomfortable or really awkward and you didn't want to be there anymore. And I thought, wow, what a humble leader. He is like, you know, essentially over me too. And he was a leader in that meeting to come back later and say, hey, I know you weren't even really involved. I don't know if you felt this way, but I want to make sure that I apologized for the tone that I had and the things that I said. It's like, wow, really appreciate that.
I love that he did.
Good guy.
Okay. So now let's talk about a positive experience you had partnering with a teacher so that we can end this on a positive note.
Please. I would say it's just maybe like in a general, there were so many great teachers that I worked with at this school. And I would say the best ones were the ones who were just open to our counseling services. So whether that was letting us come in the classroom to do a lesson, having an open door of communication to say, hey, my students are really struggling with this. Do you have a resource that can help with this? Ones that were flexible. I know that's really hard for teachers to be flexible. They're flexible all the time with fire drills and state testing and the PSAT and career day. You know, there are so many things that you're already having to give up your teaching time for. But the best teachers see when their student has a need and they're okay with them, honestly, like missing class for a little bit to work on those skills. So if I had an anger management group or a grief small group, I would tell teachers, hey, they're going to miss 20, you know, not tell them, ask permission, but they're going to miss 20 minutes from your class once a week. And I'm going to do that in this class and a different one. So it's not 40 minutes from your class, but they're going to be working on skills so that when they come to your class, they can focus. Because I don't know if you know, but their mom just died of cancer. And so if they can have a place to process that, they can come to your class ready to work. And when you, as a counselor, when I would explain that value to teachers, all of a sudden they'd be like, oh, okay, that makes sense. They're not missing my class to go play computer games or something. I don't, you know, it's not useless. Right. It's actually purposeful, and the best teachers are understanding of that. And like, let me do my job so that you can do your job. And then students are better focused and have better skills to work in your class.
I love that. I think, yeah, there's just so many things that you guys offer that I know that I didn't take as full advantage of as I could have. And so I'm all about like encouraging other teachers to do that because, yeah, I mean, our students need those skills. And I think now that I'm an actual parent of children that will be students, I'm like, man, I want my students to have that whole experience. Like if they need to miss part of biology class to work on, you know, anger management skills because they need that, then I want them there. You know, that's the most important thing. So that they're a whole well-rounded human being.
Yeah. I hate to say this, but I knew the teachers in the school who, when I knocked on their door, they would make a big deal that I was there, like I was interrupting their class and I was a burden. But on the other hand, I knew the teachers who were very welcoming and who like had a smile on their face when I came to the door. I wasn't a burden to interrupt because I was going to help them or a student in some way. And I mean, it's really, I hate that there are people who I already have that assumption about. But you know, when you work alongside someone for years and years, if they're constantly acting like they don't want to talk to you, like I'm going to avoid them and I'm going to go with the people who are easier to work with. So not that that means I'm going to interrupt your class all the time, but you're probably going to get more services for your students if you're an easier person to work with. I hate to say that, but I think it's true.
I mean, it is true. Okay. So I want to make sure we kind of touched on this earlier, but I want to know if you have anything else to say about any tips for listeners who are just looking for how they can rest and recharge over break while they have time off. And then also, what about when we get back to school and, you know, we have work, but we also have kids and life responsibilities. Like, how do we rest and recharge and not just live for our time off?
Yeah, it's a great question. You can set some boundaries around things for yourself. So when I get ready for bed at night, I have the sleep, you know, little notification pop up that says powering down your apps. And at least that's a trigger for me to go, okay, I need to like slow down on scrolling Instagram because that's not quieting my brain down for the night. I need to do that if I want to get good sleep, because I know good sleep is going to make me a more energized and better parent tomorrow. Like I have to think they're all connected to each other. And it starts with little habits. I am very into like habit building right now because that's very hard for me to do. You love it. It's hard for me. So it's something I really have to practice. And when you have a time away from work, give yourself that space to start practicing some habits you've always wanted to, whether that is going to bed earlier or waking up earlier for that quiet time before your house wakes up. Realize what is draining to you and what's life-giving. So I want my kitchen to be reset when I go to bed at night, like the countertops cleaned off. It just alleviates this stress that I feel. I don't want to start my next day already feeling like
chaotic,
burdened by what I didn't do the day before. Like right. We could talk about this, but I'm very into lazy genius principles right now. Like what can I do right now that's going to make my life easier later? What can I do right now that's going to make my life easier later? And it might be 2 minutes of doing something to prep that makes my life easier. And so I'd say, notice what some of those habits are for you and use a time off of school to start nurturing those and getting them like as part of your daily routine.
I think that's great. I think too, like when thinking in the classroom too, even just having like, I had a post-it note on my desk and it was like, these are three things I need to do before I leave the classroom so that I can come in here tomorrow and not feel, like you said, like I'm starting in chaos. And it doesn't necessarily mean I have to have every single thing graded before I walk out the door. But like for me, I'm definitely going to make sure that I've, you know, all of the tables are cleared off. My desk is organized. I've reset the whiteboard where I kept my agenda. Like that's ready for the next day. And I like to have my, you know, my bell ringers ready for, you know, the next morning. Cause that'd be like the very first thing. But even just making a small list like that of like, what are the things I need to just do right now, like you said, like so that then you can go into downtime. Like I have the same thing on my phone. It has to shut down so that I can start actually falling asleep, is I have to quiet all that other stuff first.
Yeah. I would also say if you, especially if you're not an organized person, I'm going to show you this on the video right now. I have started doing an ideal week, like a time audit of my week. And so I start and I put things, you could do this on a Google calendar. You could do it physically writing it down, but I start with the things that are non-negotiables. Like I have to drop off my kids at this time. If I have appointments, I have to be there at this time or leave my house at this time. And then I work in the other things.
Yes.
And then I work in the other things. And instead of putting work on there, I put the tasks that I want to accomplish during this chunk of time. And so it helps me feel more accomplished. And it actually helps me step away from work easier because I'm like, look, I did what I was supposed to do. Before writing down this time audit, I would always feel like there was more to do. This has been able to help me rest outside of work because I checked off the three things that there is always more to do. And I recognize that, but I can rest when I'm away from it because I have more time tomorrow in that chunk of time for the next three tasks. So that has really helped me.
I love that. I love just seeing you using a chart. Just makes my heart so happy.
It's like I haven't taken Secondary Science Simplified, but I'm sure I'm using some of those time tasks and I'm getting more organized because of being your friend.
I love a chart. Okay, so this kind of leads to our second to last question because then I got to do my last question that I always do. But you had this idea and I'm excited to hear what you have to say and I'm excited to say what I have to say. But I want to know the three things that are saving your life right now. Where did you get this idea from, by the way? I like it.
Lazy Genius has done a podcast episode every once in a while and I think she got it from someone else where she does a whole episode of what things that are saving my life right now. I don't know if she does 5 or 10 or what.
Okay.
And I think about this question often. I don't know why. I think I have what you would call an addictive personality. So I find something I like and then everybody is going to know about it and everybody's going to know I'm obsessed with it right now. And so
you're just a natural influencer. Like you're just influential. Like you, that's just,
I mean, even friends in my neighborhood, I'm like, listen, this is the book I'm reading right now. And I texted 5 people as I'm laying in bed. I'm like, you have to read this book right now. I'm like, I'm on page 20 and it's changing my life. So that's not in my list because I have a million things. So
all right, well, tell us the three.
Do you want to go me all three and then you all three or back and forth?
I don't know. What do you want to do?
Okay, I'll tell you my first one.
Okay.
Skorts.
Skorts are saving your life.
Skorts are saving my life right now because we have talked about this. It's like I feel like I have a uniform of clothes, things that I'm realizing, okay, I like wearing this. I'm comfortable in this. I really want to minimize my decision fatigue every day. Mm-hmm. And so I've thought if I go back to working in a school, I mean, one, I'm not going to wear a skirt. I'm not like a PE teacher and like an administrator who can pull that off running around the
school. Sporty dice in the counseling office.
I'm really not sporty. This is why this is kind of funny to begin with. I'm not sporty, but I'm like, okay, I want to be comfortable. So I've been ordering skirts from Amazon. Amazon, like, try before you buy. I'm like, like this fit. Don't like this style. Need more pleats. Need less pleats. Like, I'm on the quest to find the perfect skirt right now. So, you know, I can share that with you if you decide you're going to go Sporty Spice lifestyle. But I'm loving skirts right now. Just ultimate comfort. Easy to pull out of my drawer and put on. Never wrinkly. I can
looks
be
a little bit
active.
More put together, right? But
yes. I'm just like slouchy. It's like my put together uniform.
Okay. Well, it's funny that you said that. Skorts are not saving my life right now, but you mentioned decision fatigue. And one of the things I thought of when I thought three things saving my life was deciding once, which is a lazy genius thing. You got me on the lazy genius also, but just deciding something once. And then that just is what it is. And I know it sounds overly simplified, but it really does save so much mental energy to not go back and forth on a decision. And you waste so much energy doing that. And it's applying to so many areas of my life right now. But one of the ways I've decided once is for our family is just with groceries. And I've decided once that Thursdays are the day that I put together my like online grocery pickup order from Walmart. And then Fridays are the day that I pick up the groceries. And, you know, I wash the fruit and I do all those things because we like to have a stocked fridge going into the weekend. And if we are going to run out of food, we'd rather get takeout on a Thursday night, like, you know, when we're already tired from the work week, than if I get groceries on a Monday and then we're running out of food on Saturday, Sunday, and we're getting takeout on a Sunday type thing. So just deciding once. And I still don't like grocery ordering. I still don't like meal planning. But before, it was something that always loomed over me. Like, okay, I need to like sit down and like plan out meals for next week. But now it's like, I don't even think about it 6 days of the week. And then on Thursday, it's one of the things like, okay, on Thursday, before I go to bed, I'm going to sit down. I've decided once I'm going to plan the meals for next week. And then I'll order all the groceries. And then I already, you know, you have to pick a time to pick up. So that holds me accountable on Friday to actually get the groceries, because I have to pick them up between, you know, my time slot of 3 to 4 p.m. or whatever. And that has really, really taken a lot of the burden out of my mind. I feel like I have 4.5 brain cells right now, you know, postpartum.
And you can't, you kid. Don't want to have 3.5. It's like,
I don't, I cannot sacrifice a brain cell for meal planning. So yes, deciding once has helped me so much.
Okay. My next one is food related. So I'll transition into that. Okay. I like making a dessert at the beginning of the week. So I have dessert to snack on and have potentially after lunch during the day when I need to pick me up, definitely after dinner. And so, for example, I make the Ghirardelli brownies. I think it's like the triple chocolate when that's available, or double chocolate, you know, if that's all my grocery pickup allows for. And then I melt Andy's mints on the top of it. And
that's from Naptime Kitchen, isn't it?
It is. It is. Oh. And, but the idea that I have this like delicious dessert waiting for me is, I don't know. I always have to have something sweet. I need to have it on hand. If I don't, I'm like, what am I need, we got to go out and get ice cream. I'm like, so this is saving time, money, energy, and I've got a dessert waiting for me. I've been doing that a lot of weeks, and it makes everyone in my house happy. They're so excited about it.
That sounds so good. Okay. Well, my second thing is also food related. So I will piggyback you. We didn't even plan this, but these are
just haven't told each other.
These are paralleling so well. But mine, and I've talked about this for months, and you know, you're like, please, you've heard me talk about this, but I haven't talked about it on this podcast.
Okay.
Is snack tray. Okay. Yes. So snack tray, especially a snack tray dinner. Okay. So what I mean by this, if you're listening, is we just eat snacks for dinner and we put them on a tray. It's exactly how it sounds. And this is one of my favorite things to do on Thursday nights, knowing that we're running out of groceries, like going into Friday, is I will literally get a tray out. And I have one of those like travel platters that has like 5 compartments, but you can literally just get like a cutting board. And then I just put piles of different snacks and like leftovers that we have, and we put it all together. And it's basically like a snack charcuterie board, but it's not just like meat, fruit, cheese, and nuts. It's literally whatever we have left from the week. So like the last few blueberries we have, or if we have like one apple, I will slice it up into a bunch of little pieces. And then, you know, we have a couple of, you know, a couple slices of pork tenderloin that we had last night for dinner. Like I'll cut those up and put them on. And then I put a blanket on the floor for my kids, and they have an indoor picnic, and they think this
is
fun.
And they think you are the most fun mom ever.
They think I'm the most fun. And it minimizes dishes because it's just like the one tray. I love that it clears out like all of the like last little bits of food before we're about to get new food. And then it just frees my husband and I up. Like we can eat some leftovers too, or we can, you know, grab something frozen out of the freezer that our kids don't necessarily like, or, you know, just something easy. But it's saving my life because my kids think I'm so fun. It's helping me not waste food. And yeah, at the end of the week, I am like done by Thursday. I'm very, very exhausted by Thursday night. And it just makes it, again, decide once, like Thursday night, we're doing this for dinner. And it's just something I don't have to think about. And it makes my life so much easier.
I do that, but I put it in a muffin tin a lot of times.
Oh, yes. We've done that before too. But sometimes like I have too much for the whole. And so then just like an actual, but I love that idea too, just using, yeah, like your 12 whole muffin tin. That's a great idea too.
That's perfect.
Okay. Hit me with your last one.
Okay, my last one you're going to love. I think it's probably going to be saving your life too. There is a new season of Survivor on right now.
We love Survivor.
I love the cast right now. If you're a Survivor fan, you know what I'm talking about. They've got fun stories. I don't know who's going to be the villain yet. If you're not on the Survivor train, I'm here to tell you, we're leaving the station. It's time to get on, because I have rallied. We have a group text, and we're talking about Survivor as it's coming on. It is the if you're a millennial and you're like, well, I remember Richard Hatch from season one when I was in fifth or sixth grade. Mm-hmm. It's a different game now. You got to get into this. Go watch on Amazon Prime and catch up. If you're like, where do I start? There are, what, 40? This is 43, season 43.
I always tell people to start at episode 20.
That's what I tell people. That's what I was going to say. Start at episode 20.
The first 20 are so different. They're almost like archaic in nature.
And they don't fit your TV screen at that point either. 20 is a really good season to start with because it's like the best characters from those first seasons. And then work your way up. I started when I was on maternity leave with my first daughter. And y'all, I watched a lot of Survivor during that time. I'd watch one season during the day when my husband was at work, and then we'd watch a different one together in the evening. If we watched, we've seen them all. It is a fun thing to do together with friends or your spouse or partner.
It's clean. Like, you don't have to worry about, you know, it's not like Game of Thrones or something. I love that too. And if, by the time this airs, I bet the current season might be over, but they can still
go back and watch it.
I remember, like, I've watched every season of Survivor literally since I was a child. And like, when I was in college, my mom would record on VHSs the Survivors so that when I came home, I could watch them. That's how like long Survivor's been around. And I love that.
Listen, it used to be you and my mom who were the only people I knew who watched Survivor. And I would make fun of you and my mom. And then just this new wave came through. It was a new fandom. I didn't realize so many people.
I think COVID helped because there wasn't any sports. And so that's what got my husband on board, because now he watches with me now because
he didn't watch
COVID.
It before?
He would kind of like, if I had it on, he would listen, but he wasn't that engaged with it. But now he watches with me. And one of our favorite things is if someone is visiting us from out of town and like staying the night, we will make them watch Survivor with us.
This is our activity for the evening. Yes.
We've made disciples of Survivor.
Never told someone to watch Survivor and they watched it and they're like, I hate this. They become fans for life.
I love that. It's so true. So
we're
going to
turn your listeners into Survivor fans, all of them.
I love it. Okay. Well, my last thing that's saving my life, and this is as unrelated as Scorts, but, and you're going to be freaked out, but it's beef liver enzymes. Okay. Let me tell you how beef liver enzymes are saving my life.
You're really going to have to win me over on this because this doesn't seem like something I would care about.
Okay. So you know, but the listeners may not know, I have a lot of stomach problems postpartum, and it's happened, you know, my second and third children are both biological. My first is adopted. So after both of my last two children, this has happened. And it's just like my body can't figure out how to work again after all my organs have been shoved up into my rib cage for 9 months. So I always have to do like kind of like a whole 30 type cleanse. And I just have a hard time, and I have a really hard time regaining energy. It's like my body doesn't know how to like pull energy from food and keep me energized. And then when I do these cleanses, I can't have coffee. And so anyway, long story short, I have done science experiment upon science experiment in my body to figure out like, what do I need supplement wise to like help my body feel good? And I've tried every type of like trendy vitamin provider, and I've tried all the different multivitamins, all these different things. And beef liver enzymes have been where it's at.
Where do you get those? Like, what is
Amazon? Duh. You know, I would not try anything I couldn't prime and then return at the UPS store with, you know, without repackaging. But
could you return those if you didn't like those? You used them and then you send them back?
You know, I haven't tried, but I feel like I have such a good relationship with UPS and Amazon at this point that they would let me. But I didn't need to return because I was in.
You love them so much.
But basically, you can do a lot of research into it, but your liver is an organ that, you know, is processing a lot of these things. And so beef liver, you know, specifically is really, really concentrated with a lot of the vitamins that we need. And so the best source would be to actually eat and cook an actual like cow's liver. But since most people can't stomach that because it's extremely irony in taste, then they found ways to kind of like dehydrate it. Obviously, anytime you dehydrate anything and put it into like a pill form, it's going to lose some of the nutrients, but it's still like you're getting like 2000% of like the vitamin K you need in these little capsules. Long story short, I'm not going to like, you know, give you a sermon on beef liver. You can Google it yourself.
You already
beef
have.
Liver enzymes. And I think it's called like ancestral supplements.
Link it in the show notes for the people who do want to try the
beef liver. We'll link it in the show notes. Enzymes. It's not an affiliate link. So I don't get any kickback for you taking beef liver. But it really has, you cannot take it at night. I used to take all my vitamins at night because they'd give me an upset stomach. So I take it at night so I could sleep after. These wake you up. And so I have to take them in the morning, but it's been awesome, especially since I haven't had coffee in the last month or so. So it's just like I drink my little cup of tea and I got my beef liver enzymes and I'm ready to rock for the day. And it doesn't upset my stomach. That, again, that's one of my problems.
That's the purpose. Yeah.
I've been loving it. I feel good and like
better quality of life, it sounds like.
Yes, my nails and my hair are all really good too. I'm not having to take like an additional collagen supplement or anything like that like I used to. So I'm here for the beef liver enzymes. Okay.
There you go.
So let's write it back into the topic of this podcast for anyone who is still hanging into this conversation with us. And I got to ask you my final question. I always ask all my guests one way you've simplified your life recently. And I know you've shared things that are saving your life, but like make it specific for the name of the podcast, Secondary Science Simplified. Have you simplified in your life recently that's changed your life?
Yeah. I'll tell you something I did this weekend to simplify my life. I used two lazy genius principles. I batched and I did something that would make my life easier later. I made muffins, tons of different muffins, two different types, but lots of them. Bagged them, put them in the freezer because my kids one of them will eat them for breakfast. So when our mornings are hectic, I pull one of those muffins out of the freezer, nuke it in the microwave for 20 seconds, and breakfast is ready. And I don't have to think twice. Like I know that my kid is going to eat it. We're not going to have a meltdown. And I've prepared that for weeks. I mean, they will be in there for as long as I keep them in there. And it might take a few minutes, but if I'm making one batch anyway, I might as well make two batches and then pull things out of the freezer. I know you're a big freezer meal proponent.
I live out of the freezer. Yes.
Yes. And same now that I'm like getting into that, I'm realizing, hey, these are ways to simplify my life. And so if it's going to take a little bit of extra time to save me some mental energy or decision fatigue later, I'm going to do it. So that's what's saving saving my life, but also simplifying my life.
Well, and I feel like it truly is like 5 extra minutes on the front end to chop an extra onion and, you know, freeze the diced onion or to make an extra, to double that muffin recipe so that you can freeze it or whatever. But then on the front end, yeah, you're maybe saving 30 minutes on like being able to pull dinner out and then just throw it in the oven. But it's also, like you said, it's the mental energy that you save. Like all day you're tired at school and you're thinking like, oh my gosh, I like need to rally to cook dinner when I get home. And then we still got to bathe the kids and da, da, da. But it's like, no, like one of those things I know is off my plate. Like I get tickled knowing like, oh, tonight's dinner, we just like pull it out of the freezer and it'll be ready to go. And I can just let it bake for an hour while I do the kids' baths or, you know, while we send someone off to flag football practice or whatever it may be.
So. And I'll say I don't have like a big extra freezer like in my garage or anything like that. Like I make it work with what I have as part of my fridge freezer combo, and which causes me to look in there and use what I have and constantly be like changing things out. And I mean, I just didn't do that earlier in life enough. Like I would think, I'm single. I'm the only one eating the chili I've prepared. And now I have to eat it for 15 meals. And that I would be like, I'm just not going to make chili. And I love chili. So if I would have taken some of these principles before where just freeze it and then I can eat it, you know, a month later. And I thank my past self because my life is easier and more simplified.
Yes. My sister is single and I sent her those super cubes. And so then she does that. She'll like make her crock pot meals or whatever, which feed like an army. And then she'll freeze them in the super cubes. And then she's like been so tickled. It's been fun. I gave it to her like a couple months ago and still at least once a week, I get a text from her because she's a doctor and she'll text me from, you know, work and be like, look at my tikka masala or whatever I'm eating for lunch because I just pulled it out of the freezer. I'm just so happy that this is what I'm eating for lunch as opposed to like Coke and
scraps.
Something from the cafeteria. Exactly. So
love it.
I love it.
Do you share something that's simplifying your life right now usually or is just the guest?
I don't normally, but I always could. One thing that's simplifying my life right now, this is going to sound so silly, but and this was from Lazy Genius, which you got me on the Lazy Genius train. But I rearranged my closet. I used to have it color coordinated because that's who I am. But I rearranged it now into categories. So there's a category of like clothes that I would wear to church or to like you know, any sort of social event, like going on a date. And then I have like my everyday uniform clothes. Like I'm wearing the same thing pretty much every day in a different derivation. That's in the middle. And then the far right is like layering pieces, like sweatshirts or sweaters you can put on top of any of the other categories. And it makes it so much easier to walk in and be like, I'm only looking at this one narrow section and, or I'm only looking at this section. And that's really simplified my decision fatigue in the mornings too. And I was like forgetting about certain things I had because they were getting lost in the color coordination, like, you know, sleeveless
yeah,
tops.
I can see that because mine's colored right now, color coordinated for the most part. And I can see that how I miss things all the time.
Yeah. And our closet's really tiny. We share, you could say it's a walk-in closet, but it's like a step into it closet and we share it. And so everything's pretty squished together, but I'm excited because we're building a new house and in the new house, I'll have more of an L. So I'm actually going to like put them on different sides of the closet. So that way
Your life is going to get even more simple.
Even more simple. I cannot wait. I love to talk to my husband about all the systems I'm already, you know, brainstorming for the new house.
He's like, cool. Glad that's working for you. Maybe literally like, I'll benefit from it in some way.
No. He's like, please stop. I'm exhausted. I keep telling him I'm so excited because we're going to have our own closets for the first time. And I can't wait to pick up all of his things off the floor and put them in his closet and close the door.
He's going
to
be a mess.
I'll never see them. I don't care because I'm not going in there. Well, seriously, thank you so much for coming. I mean, this has been our dream is to have a podcast together where we can just talk about all of our thoughts and feelings. But I hope we made it relevant enough for my listeners that they will listen and enjoy this. But I loved our time together.
This is perfect. They're really going to enjoy it, I think, as something that is easy to listen to over their winter break and maybe give them some things to think about to simplify their lives and work with their counselor as they head back into the new semester.
Yes, I loved it. Well, thanks, Lauren.
Doors are opening to my high school counseling membership, the Click Collaborative, on January 18th. Mark your calendar, put that date in the back of your mind, January 18th. Make sure you're signed up for the wait list at clickcollab.com. That's CLIQUECOLLAB.com. Because I'll be sending out some fun stuff that Counselor Click has going on in January as soon as you get back from winter break. Enjoy some time off of school, and I'll see you next week. Thanks for listening to today's episode of High School Counseling Conversations. All of the links I talked about today can be found in the show notes and also at counselorclick.com/podcast. Be sure to hit follow or subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast so that you never miss a new episode. Connect with me over on Instagram. Send me a DM at counselorclick. That's CLIQUE. Thanks so much for hanging out with me. I'll see you next time.